my name is Jean Yoon, and I'm joined by Todd Wagner, and we're both from the Health Economics Resource Center. So today, the topic of our cyber seminar is to discuss various sources of data on VA and non-VA costs, and also sources of information on providers. These are sources that you might find useful for a current project or for future projects. So we want to talk about these data sources today because we and our colleagues have worked with them or learned about them over the years, and we wanted to share with what we learned with you. Okay. So in this sub-seminar, we're not actually going to be talking about encounter-level cost data. That's actually the topic of a cyber seminar in about 2 weeks. So today we'll be discussing five other topics and data sources that might be useful to you. So today we'll be talking about a file that HERC creates, which is the person level cost file. We'll be discussing sources of non-VA costs. We'll also be going over geographic variation and costs and how to deal with this. And then we'll be talking about a few different sources on data for healthcare providers, including the VA paid system. So first I'll be talking about the person level cost file. So for some projects, you're going to want to get detailed costs for specific kinds of encounters and inpatient stays. For other types of projects, you may just want to know what is the annual cost for these patients in this VAMC. So that's where you would go to the person level cost file for these kinds of data. So what this file does is it reports for each patient, their total annual costs, and a summary of their utilization of VA care. This file has been created since 1998. So in this file, we report costs for five different categories of inpatient care and four different categories of outpatient care. We also report total pharmacy costs and the separate breakout for total fee basis costs. We also have some limited utilization measures. So for example, we report the total inpatient length of stay during the year, and we do that for these five different inpatient categories, and we also report total outpatient visits for each patient. So in this file, we break out inpatient costs for these different categories of inpatient care. So we separate them out for medical surgical care, behavioral care, long-term care, residential domiciliary, and all other types care. So this file has the costs for each patient in each fiscal year, but there can be hospital stays that overlap between two fiscal years. So in order to assign costs each fiscal year, the costs are allocated based on the proportion of days of the stay in each fiscal year. For outpatient categories of care, we separate outpatient costs by medical surgical care, behavioral care, diagnostic care, and all other. So the methods for estimating these costs come from the HERC average cost data. So if you're not familiar with these data, this is a method that HERC researchers developed in order to assign costs to different hospital stays and outpatient visits. And the methods were designed so that encounters or hospital stays with the same characteristics had the same costs. And there were three methods that were developed for three different types of care. So the first was for acute medical surgical stays. Basically, these costs were estimated based on what the stay would have cost in a Medicare hospital. It's based on a regression model that uses things like DRG, length of stay, and patient age in the regression model to estimate costs. There's another method that was used to estimate costs for other types of inpatient care, and that's primarily based on length of stay. And then the third method was used to estimate outpatient care. And these costs were estimated using procedure codes in each outpatient encounter, and they're based on hypothetical Medicare payments. So in this file, you're going to find two different types of costs. So one is a national cost and one is a local cost. So for the national cost estimates, we took the sum of all patients, the sum of all the costs of all the patients nationally, and the total costs are reconciled to equal the total costs that are reported by the MCA or managerial cost accounting system. So for the local cost estimates, the costs of all patients in a VAMC are reconciled to equal the total costs that are reported by the VAMC in MCA data. So depending on the type of project you're going to use, you may want to either use the national or the local cost estimate. So in this person-level cost file, we also sum up the total outpatient pharmacy costs for each patient, and we obtain this from the MCA National Data Extracts pharmacy file. We also have a separate breakout for fee basis costs, which we obtain from the inpatient, ancillary, outpatient, and pharmacy files. So if you work with fee basis data, you know that there can be a lag in when fee basis claims get paid out. So we don't add the fee basis data until typically 2 years after the fiscal year ends. So if you're wanting to use these person-level cost files, they are located on CDW right now. So they are both on the static server in SQL tables, and they're also stored as SAS data sets in this folder listed here. And the name of the person-level cost files is also listed here, PL costs, and then XX refers to the years of the data set. So if you're looking for more information about the use of these data sets, HERC has also produced a detailed guidebook that's available on our intranet site. So now I'll turn over the next section to Todd Wagner.
Thanks, Jane. I just have to show my screen, so one second here. And Jane, if you could let me know when you...
Yeah, I can see it now.
Okay. So thank you so much. And thanks, Gina. It was a reminder. So I've been here for 16 years. Was one of the first people to help create the average cost data. It just reminded me of that history. When we first started creating those data, the MCA or DSS data, as we know it, didn't exist. And so we were developing those data so people had some estimate of cost. And now people often use one or the other, and we often get asked questions about why do we still make those data. And what I find them often useful for is actually the triangulation. So there's been talks on HSR data about outliers that we've contributed to. And so if you're in one of those questions where you're trying to figure out are the costs associated with my participants in a study valid, sometimes two cost estimates are very useful for triangulating those information. Now, we work on a lot of clinical trials here at HERC. And one of the questions that we're often grappling with is the non-VA utilization. So I just wanted to walk you through different ways of estimating the cost for non-VA care. So it's very common for veterans to use non-VA providers. And so we're just going to walk you through some of the pros and cons of different methods for identifying the utilization and estimating the non-VA costs. I would say that historically, use of non-VA care is common among veterans. Think of it among patients who are 65 or veterans who are 65 and over, almost all of them are going to be Medicare eligible. And so we know that a large number of these folks use non-VA care. Laura Peterson from the Houston VA did a study published in 2010 that looked at their use of non-VA care. We know that distance to the VA matters. The farther they are from a VA, the more likely they're to use alternative sources of care because it's hard to get to the VA. We also know that reliance varies by medical need. There tends to be more use of VA for things like substance use and mental health treatment, PTSD treatment, both because VA tends to provide these things quite generously, especially in relation to sort of commercial providers or Medicare providers. Think also now more recently, so since the Laura Peterson study in 2010, think about changes in federal policies that affect use, one being the Affordable Care Act, the second being the Veterans Choice Act. So Affordable Care Act, which Gene has worked closely on, has really worked to expand Medicaid eligibility and payments. So you can imagine if you have some poor veterans who are means-tested, they may have outside of VA now. Likewise, in the Veterans Choice Act, there's been $10 billion that's been put into VA care from Congress to expand services through what we think of as purchase care or fee basis. So there's an increasing sort of reliance on non-VA providers. So here's a Venn diagram trying to get you a sense on what I think of as, and don't take this Venn to be specifically a perfect estimate of what the total dollars are. We don't really know. in part because the gray area remains ill-defined. So we know that there is Medicare and Medicaid services, and I'll talk about how to actually get those utilization data. And we know that there is the services in pink there or orange, which is the fee basis or contract care, and we're having better luck getting those data, and we can talk a little bit about that as well. But it's very tough to get the full universe of non-VA. And if you do different methods, if you triangulate here, you have to be careful about double counting. I'll explain that. So Medicare, it's nearly universal coverage for adults over 65. The eligibility criteria are quite simple. You have to be a U.S. citizen or legal resident. You have to have lived in the U.S. for 5 or more years and then work 10 or more years for a Medicare-eligible employer. So quite quickly, you can imagine that that covers almost everybody over age 65. Medicare also covers individuals with disabilities. So if you have a long-term disability, you are also covered by Medicare. Things like Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, as well as end-stage renal disease are covered by Medicare. When you're working with VA data, you get quite quickly thinking about things like outpatient and inpatient care. And I just want to remind you, if you're not familiar with Medicare data, that the processing of Medicare data is very different depending on the part you're in. And there's really four major parts of Medicare. Part A, which is the historical payment to facilities, traditionally thought of as inpatient care. In the U.S. healthcare system, ever since the 1960s, when Medicare was signed into law, we've had a division between facilities and providers, and there's never really been providers have never really wanted to work solely for facilities. VA is a little bit different. We hire our providers, group health, they hire their providers, but generally speaking, there's contractual relationships. So Part B is the payment to providers. It's historically thought of as ambulatory care provision. Part C is Medicare Advantage, which is the sort of HMO model for Medicare. It's a risk capitated model. And Medicare has been both pushing that as well as value-based payments in the Part A and Part B. And then Part D, as most people know, is the prescription coverage. Generosity, if you're interested in generosity, there's been changes recently, but you can get onto the website for Medicare and see what Medicare covers. In many ways, I think of VA as being more generous. VA covers things like hearing aids, vision, dental, that are not routinely covered for Medicare. And you'll often find, and Laura Peterson shows this, veterans coming to VA specifically for those things because the benefits are better here. Now, if you're interested in doing research, and you wanted to get access to Medicare data, you work with VIREC, and there's the link for the VIREC data on the intranet site. You have to be careful. There is a 2-year lag in access to the data. So if you're wanting to do real-time numbers, that's a little bit of a problem. But I would say that the data are really well documented and relatively easy to use, and there's both resources in VIREC. We have some resources, but also outside of VIREC, if you're using broader senses, there's what's called the ResDAC at the University of Minnesota that helps people understand Medicare data. There's also the Medicaid file. Gene, I wasn't sure if you wanted to walk people. You've had probably the most experience out of anyone that I know that uses the Medicaid data. Sure, I can switch this back or I can move the slides for you. Your call.
You can move the slides for me.
Just
these two slides. So basically, there are detailed Medicaid data. The states submit data to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, and these data are then extracted to create these national Medicaid analytic extract files to support research policy analysis. So the MAX data are available for all fee-for-service patients and only for a subset of managed care plans. So the managed care plans are not don't have the same requirements for reporting data to the states, so some of the data on managed care patients is not as complete. So you should be aware of that if you want to use the MAX data. One analysis that was conducted in 2007 found that 66% of states had usable outpatient encounter data from managed care plans. If you could go to the next slide.
Sure.
So VIREC has linked the MAX data to veterans enrolled in VA, so you can make a request to VIREC for these data. There is a sizable lag in the data. So the most recent recently available file right now is for 2010. That's calendar year 2010. There are several different files in the MAX data. So there's a person summary file, which lists characteristics about the patient, what sort of eligibility they have when they're enrolled in Medicaid. There's a separate inpatient file that reports inpatient services, other services file, which reports on outpatient care and ancillary care, professional services for inpatient stays. And then there's a separate prescription drug file. So for the person summary file, there's one record per enrollee per state per year. And then for the inpatient file, there's one record for each inpatient stay. And then for the other services and the pharmacy file, there's actually one record for each claim. So these are just some things to keep in mind if you want to work with these data. That's it for the MAX data.
Great. I'm actually going to back up further. There was a great question that I need to address back on the Medicare questions, which is, so let's say you know that a patient went to an inpatient facility. One of the questions that came up on the online, and thank you for people for submitting questions, was how do you track the inpatient cost? And what you're going to see is that the facility gets a payment that covers things like the room and board. If there was surgery during the hospital stay, it'll cover the surgical component. But the payment to the providers, and that provider could be the attending, the hospital, or the, you know, the attendings on ward, it could be the surgeon who did it, are going to be done through Part B on this. So there are separate payments for the providers and separate for the facilities. So if you're wanting to get a complete accurate estimate of that inpatient care, you have to combine Part A and Part B. Now, just to make life a little bit easier to avoid this whole trouble, in many of the studies that I work on, I try to, instead of trying to track down inpatient and outpatient costs because of this complication, sometimes I'll make totals for Medicare. But it depends really on your study and what you're wanting to do, but that's a great question. So just to remind people, if you have questions, there is a question dashboard, and you can send in your questions, and we can address those as you go. So fee basis, purchase care, as I mentioned earlier in the talk, Congress, through the Veterans Choice Program, pumped in $10 billion over the next 3 years to expand fee basis care. Now, the file, I will say that we've been working with those data. The file structure and the data are changing rapidly to the Choice Act. There's a lot of pressure both on the facilities locally to work and pay for these things, as well as accountability at the national level. So they're developing new systems almost daily to figure these things out. What I would push out is the new HERC guidebook that Risha Goodwani, who's a health economist here, has done. It's easy to overlook the tables. She has done a huge amount of work putting together these Excel tables. The tables are awesome. So if you're interested in understanding variables or how things are categorized, jump to the tables. There are many, many different tables there. So go on. If further questions about fee-basis care, let us know and we can get back to you on that. The other thing that you can – oh, there's a question? Oops, I thought I heard that.
No, okay. No, not right now.
Thanks. The third area that we've often worked on, when you're, especially if you're doing a prospective study, is you can do self-report. I've often argued perhaps it's the best way to measure all non-VA care on the extensive margin. What I mean by extensive margin is, did you use care in the last year? How many times did you visit care in the last year? Self-report is not great for understanding the intensive margin, which would be like, you know, what kind of services did you get while you were on the inpatient side? Patients generally just don't know all that detail, and so they're not great on the intensive margin, but they tend to be quite good on the extensive margin. Now, there's a specificity comprehension trade-off, and here's the classic question that you might see, and the framing of the question really matters in the self-report, which is something like, during the past 12 months, how many times have you seen a doctor or other healthcare professional? So right away, you get to see the doctor or other healthcare professional, so it could be a nurse or a physician's assistant, about your own health at a doctor's office, a clinic, or some other place, so again, the location. And then it says, do not include times you were hospitalized overnight, visits to a hospital emergency room, home visits, or telephone calls. So when you talk about surveys, it's very complex on how you try to get the people to think back on their time. I'm going to give you an example here, so I apologize. This is sort of a diagram. It's what I really think of as a cognitive process of recalling the information. There's a lot that go into the sort of the way we think about self-report. Aman Bhandari and I did a paper on this that synthesized the literature, and we talked about these modifiable attributes that go into self-report. And you can, when you develop your questionnaires, you can think about the recall time frame. Are you going back 3 months, a year? The type of utilization. Are you really focused on inpatient care? Utilization frequency, the number of visits, the event repetition, and so forth. Questionnaire design. A lot of these things really matter in how you develop your self-report utilization. I'm going to give you an example of the sort of the cognitive problem. So I apologize if I gross people out, but this is really tough. This is my leg this summer. So I tore my Achilles. And if you ask me how many times that I visited a doctor this past year, I was thinking about this as I was putting the talk together. My best guess is 9. But there's a lot of, you know, I can tell you June 18th, I tore my Achilles. June 19th, I had surgery for my Achilles. And I can tell you that, okay, so there was, you know, weekly visits to the surgeon for a couple weeks thereafter. Then there was a lot of PT. But I couldn't tell you anything about the care that I used before June 18th. That's just a fuzz to me. I couldn't tell you anything about the anesthesia. Of course, I was under, so I couldn't tell you anything more about that. But there was, so that's that intensive margin. So keep in mind that you're asking all of these participants to sort of rebuild their chronological history when you ask them self-report. That's why I would say that it's no good trying to get self-reported costs. They're just unreliable. Most patients don't know. You have to impute costs from self-reports. So that there can be biases when you do that, and these are not as precise as accounting data. You could go after billing data, and there have been times where we've tried to do that, where you call up and you say, using a self-report, you said, did you use the doctor in the last 3 months? The patient said, yes, I went to a non-VA hospital. You then go after the non-VA provider with, you know, forms, HIPAA release forms, medical release forms. You might get a lot more detail in this way, but I would say the last bullet here, it's really hard to do this. It takes a lot of effort, and missing data are common. You eventually get in touch with the billing office at the hospital. Maybe they don't like the form you're using. Maybe they want payment for Xeroxing. Maybe they just never respond. And so you really have to dedicate an RA to collecting this data. And you still may have missing data. So that's a real challenge with collecting data from non-VA providers. So generally speaking, if you're worried about non-VA use, Medicare is going to be a great option and probably your easiest option. Then, you know, maybe self-report or some of these other methods. The time and location, I'm going to switch over just to talk quickly about time and location and ways that you need to think about time and location when you're working with cost data. The time issue is everybody knows that there's inflation. Costs vary over time. If you're working with data that are historical over many years of data, you need to adjust these, and what we recommend is the General Consumer Price Index or the Producer Price Index. What we generally encourage people not to use, and it seems so counterintuitive, is don't use the Medical Care Consumer Price Index. What we generally say is that overstates inflation because it does not sufficiently control for changes in quality. And the citation of the Richard Frank and Ernie Burns paper, they were looking at a long time period and treatment for depression. So if you go back historically in depression through the 90s, and sort of test your age here, you can think about the development of new medications for treating depression that really represented novel breakthroughs in how we medically manage people with depression. These were huge quality gains. And so you can't easily say when new SSRIs came on the market that those were just a price change because we were really treating depression very differently than we had treated it in the past. And so you have to try when you think about inflation to disentangle prices from quality. The Medical Care Consumer Price Index, generally speaking, we don't think it does a great job with that, so I generally recommend the Consumer Price Index. So there you go. There's my one slide on time. Geographic variation in costs. So I don't know where all of you are across the country, but let me pick on two general areas of the country. One is Houston, and the other one is San Francisco. If you're a physician in Houston and you get a salary of $200,000, you might be thinking to yourself, wow, that's pretty good. I'm in the sort of national average labor market. Housing's not too expensive. I can buy things here. In San Francisco, that's a relative poor salary for physicians in San Francisco. San Francisco labor rates, compared to the national average, are 70% higher for physicians. So, you know, a lot of it goes into that. It's just the cost of housing is more expensive out here. The cost of gas is more expensive out here. So that geographic variation really matters. If you do not account for this and you're using, let's say, the MCA data, you may end up making a judgment. For example, you might say, oh, man, all those San Francisco physicians or Palo Alto physicians, they're so inefficient because they're so expensive. And look at all our high-cost patients are all from Palo Alto and San Francisco, when it might be just the fact that we're forgetting to take into account these variations in labor. Now, I focused here on labor. You could also pick a bone with me and say, well, there's also geographic variation that results in utilities. And you're right. If you were to be careful here, you would also want to account for utility rates and how those vary across the country. Hospitals, physicians' offices, they need utilities to operate. We have developed a FERC wage index file. So we went, Medicare adjusts their payments to physicians and, you know, labor in each market area, and they use urban areas, these consolidated core-based statistical areas. And so we were able to link those core-based statistical areas back to VA medical centers at the stay 5A level. So you can now use this wage information. The data are available from, I think we just actually should update the slide, it's the 2014, the data are available. It's just a an Excel data sheet, and you can link these and you can combine it to STATA or SAS. And that way you can see if you're doing a study that's comparing nursing homes and you've got Minnesota, Togus, Maine, and California, you can now control for the wage index in your regression. And we can talk more about that. So I apologize for that typo. They're available through at least 2014. Gene, can I transfer the power and control back to you? And again, just a reminder, if people have any questions, they can type them in, and I will answer those questions if I confused you. All right, I can see your slides, Gene. You're all set. But I think you might be muted.
Okay, thanks. So I'm going to talk now about sources of provider information. So there may be times for different projects where you may want to identify the providers who treated the patients in your study. So for example, you may want to look at providers who received certain kinds of interventions versus versus providers who didn't. You may want to look at certain provider characteristics and how they affect how they treated patients. So for example, you may want to understand what their specialty is or their age or how long they've worked in the VA and how that affected the quality of care. Or you may not necessarily be interested in the characteristics of these providers, but you may want to control for which providers treated which patients. So you may want to adjust for clustering of patients within certain providers, or you may want to have some sort of dummy or fixed effect for the provider that the patient saw. So luckily for us in VA data, provider is identified in many different data sets. So these are just some examples of the data sets that have provider information. So outpatient visits. In each outpatient encounter, there can be multiple providers who are involved in the care for that outpatient encounter. There's a file that has primary care assignments that lists which patients are assigned to which primary care providers. There's in the hospital discharge file, it lists which providers provided care during that hospital stay. For outpatient prescription fills, that data lists the ordering provider. And the laboratory and radiology orders also list the ordering provider for those data as well. So there is a file called the National Healthcare Practitioner Database. And in this file, it contains the provider name, the medical center where they practice, a VA provider ID, and identifying information with the real and scrambled Social Security number. So there is a provider ID in, used in most VA data sets. And so what it does, it identifies a specific provider. But if a provider was practicing in more than one site, then that provider would have more than one provider ID. So you should be aware of this. It's formatted slightly different in MCA data versus other data like the VA medical SAS data, which has inpatient outpatient data. And they can have it can go by different variable names in different data sets as well. So in addition to just identifying unique providers, you may also want to identify the provider type. So for example, you may only be interested in identifying internal medicine physicians or dermatologists, or you may want to identify nurse practitioners working in primary care. So this provider type field can be helpful to you. So basically, there's a national provider classification system that was developed by CMS and ANSI, and basically these are federal agencies. So these provider types are not just for VA providers, but they're used for, you know, providers nationally. And so each provider type has a unique 6-character code, and this provider type is used denote the type of provider and the area of their specialization. These provider types exist not only for physicians, but for nurse practitioners and as well as some other providers. So this provider type may have a slightly different variable name in different data sets. And while it's not in the National Healthcare Practitioner Database I talked about earlier, but it is in other data sets like the PCMM and the MedSAS files. So I'll just mention the PCM briefly. So that's the primary care management module, and that lists all primary care providers and the patients who are assigned to those providers. If you want information on detailed outpatient and inpatient data, then you would get that from the MedSAS data. So the provider data are located on CDW if you're looking for these data. So the NHCPD files are in CDW. In the library with the file name listed here, and the data are up to fiscal year 13. The PCMM data are available on the CDW production server and the static server. So that was just a sort of brief overview on how to identify unique providers in VA data. But if you're looking for more information, HRC has produced a guidebook, Guide to VA Data on Healthcare Providers. It was produced in 2011, so there may be a couple things that are out to date, like where to find the data, things like that. But this guidebook is available on our website. You can just go to hrc.research.va.gov. Next talk, I'll talk a little bit about pay data. So pay data comes from VA's payroll system, and it stands for Personnel and Accounting Integrated Data System. So there's many different types of pay data, but there's two basic parts to paid. So one is a history file. So this history file has data from every single VA employee from each VA pay period. You can imagine it's a pretty big file. There's also a master file, which is an annual file that contains detailed human resources information about each VA employee. So in the history file, this is basically all the information that's used to generate a paycheck. So for each VA employee, there's detailed hours worked for each pay period, including information about shifts, like whether they work the night shift or the day shift. There's detailed information about pay, including things like tax deductions and adjustments as well. In the master file, this is where you'll find more detailed information about characteristics of VA employees. You can find education and qualifications, including degree dates, so you can figure out what year the provider graduated from medical school. There's some demographic information, so things like age and gender are in the paid file. You can get the hire date, so you can figure out how long an employee worked for the VA. And there's also a job description and title for each person. So you may want to pull information from paid and link that to other VA data. So in the pay data, the individual identifiers for each VA employee are the Social Security number, the name, and the birth date. And there are some workplace identifiers. So, for example, you may want to limit your study or project to certain inpatient wards or certain facilities. So there's something called the TLU, which is the time and leave units, the facility where they work, and the budget object code, which it gives you information on what type of employee they are. So for example, there would be a different BOC code for nurse versus physician. So if you want to link pay data to other VA data, you'll have to do that with a crosswalk file since there is no provider ID in the pay data. While the MCA and other kinds of inpatient outpatient data have a provider ID, you'll have to use the crosswalk file to link SSN from paid to the provider ID. So you might be wondering what sort of project could you do with pay data. So our colleague at HERC here in PHIBS has actually used pay data to do a detailed analysis of nurse staffing in inpatient units. So there's a lot of information on paid on nurses. So basically, for nurses, each nurse manager of each inpatient unit has their own TLU unit. So basically, you can identify all nurses working for the same TLU in the same inpatient unit. And so what Kieran has done is that he's also linked that information to other kinds of VA data. So for example, he looked at nurse staffing using paid, and then he was able to obtain total nursing hours and total nursing costs from the ALBCC, which is the Account Level Budget Cost Center. So this is possible, this sort of analysis is possible for nurses because nurse managers have their own TLU, but unfortunately it's not the case for physicians and other types of providers. But this is just one example of what you might be able to use pay data for. You can also use pay data to look at primary care providers and look at the workload of primary care providers and which patients they were treating. So if you want to access this pay data, as you can imagine, there's a lot of sensitive information like SSNs and names in this file. You will have to go through the national data systems to access this data. But it is kept on the CDW and CDW raw in the server listed here. HERC has also produced a detailed guidebook on the use of pay data, so there's more information about paid, and there's variable listing and variable descriptions in this guidebook. So this guidebook is available on our website if you'd like to use it. So basically, that was sort of a brief overview of a variety of different topics that could be useful for researchers or operations analysts. If you're interested in any of the resources that we talked about today, I encourage you to go to our website because we have lots of information in the form of guidebooks. We have technical reports and a few tabulations. We have a frequently asked questions page, which provides brief descriptions about different kinds of data and methods. So all sensitive information is going to be kept on the intranet. So just be aware of that. So some of our guidebooks are kept on the intranet as opposed to the intranet. We find that the HSR data listserv is a very useful place in order to find information about different kinds of data sources and be able to ask other users of VA data more specific questions. So if you're not already on this listserv, we encourage you to use it. And we recently joined Twitter, thanks to Todd. So if you're a Twitter user, we encourage you to follow us. We'll report on any sort of new methods or new data sources that we're aware of to help you out. Todd, did you want to add anything?
Oh, that's great, Jean. So we don't have any other questions yet, but thank you for a great overview on the provider data. And just to reiterate, I think a lot of people are very interested in understanding provider behavior, and so these data are really critical not only for understanding labor economics, but also you could do a lot to understand provider behavior, especially if you're an implementation science researcher.
I encourage you to type in any questions into the Q&A panel, and then we can answer them for you now.
Yeah, and thanks, Jean, for the plug on Twitter. We are trying to do a little bit more outreach via Twitter just so that we can push out more information on, you know, whether it's new papers or new guidebooks and new class offerings and so forth. So.
And if you have any suggestions for us about what sorts of things you would like to see us post on Twitter, feel free to let us know that as well. Doesn't look like there are any questions right now. Is there any sort of follow-up, Heidi, you want to provide to the audience?
Well, we are in the middle of our cost-effectiveness analysis course. We are regularly sending out registration information on that. I know a lot of you have been attending that. You will see another registration announcement coming out this afternoon. If you haven't had a chance to stop in, please register. We would love to see you at that course. As I close the meeting out today, you will be prompted for a feedback form. Please take a few moments to fill that out. Give us some feedback on what you would like to see in an upcoming session. And it looks like we actually just got another...
Two questions.
Two questions, then.
Yep. One is about access to the PowerPoint. So, Heidi, I'll let you address that. So, yes, you can get the slide for that.
Yep. I will send the link out to everyone right now.
And then the other question is, which of the data are publicly available? That's a great question, especially because VA has been and the White House has been trying to promote the availability of data, of healthcare data. Currently, as VA, we only make available publicly the Medicare Wage Index file. Otherwise, you need to use the Data Access Request Tracker, the DART system, to get access to use VA. VA still, because it's got all this protected health information on it. You know, most people are using either local servers that are OINT maintained from VA or they're using the Vinci system. But none of that data can be pulled off without approvals.
So there's actually more detailed information if you go to the Vinci site, and there's a very specific sort of request process based on whether you're doing a research project or some sort of project for operations. So you can find all the forms and more information about the data request process from Vinci.
Okay. There's a couple more questions coming. Yeah, one question came in is, can we say more about the MCA cost files? And this person isn't familiar with them. These are activity-based cost accounting system files, and we actually have slides from previous talks. So I'll follow up with this person directly to say more about those files. And periodically, we do give overviews, and there is a discussion coming up. Jean, do we have one in the cost effectiveness course on that?
Yes. So in about 2 weeks, we'll be talking about the MCA and average cost data. So that's Wednesday, February 3rd at 11. And I should mention that they used to be called DSS, Decision Support System, and then they were renamed MCA.
There's another question that came in, and it says, regarding the wage index file, is the idea to reduce the regional variation by dividing each site by the wage index? And it's actually, that's a great question that's come in. If you knew that the total labor at each facility and each stay was X, you could then divide it by the wage index. But what we typically see is the total cost at each facility, and that total cost is more than just labor. So you wouldn't want to divide the total cost of each day, and that would be sort of a direct adjustment. So typically what we tell people to do is if they're doing a multivariate regression analysis where they're looking at, you know, patients' total cost, they can put the wage index as a right-hand side variable in that model and help control for it. Another way that one could do it is to use dummy variables if they have large enough data for, you know, regional areas. And so you could let the dummy variables themselves be fixed effects, so to speak, for those regional areas. There have been questions over time about how stable is wage increase across the country. And if you're working with 1 or 2 or 3 years of data, you can probably be fine using a dummy variable for the wage index. But over a longer period and over periods of, let's go back to 2007 and the Great Recession, there were definitely markets that were much harder hit by the Great Recession than other markets. There was a downtick in the economy out here and in Boston, but places like Michigan were really hard hit. And so there are times when you need to have more than just a single fixed effect in there. He your great questions. So thank you all for chiming in. That looks like it. So people can always follow up with us for further information, whether it's just emailing us directly or you can also email herc@va.gov.
Thanks for joining our session today. If you have any suggestions for future cyber seminars or future HERC health economics courses, please let us know. We hope you join us for the next cyber seminar.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Jean, and thanks, Heidi.
Okay. Thank you.